And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
It's that time again. Hi, everybody. Yes, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics, Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I'm Gary Matuta, your host and sensei, and just want to welcome everybody. You know, it's time to talk about defending the faith. And, you know, one person that has been so influential with conversions, not only back from the early 1900s, but even to today, is a fellow known as G.K. Chesterton. Chesterton has been incredibly influential author, thinker, and also, he's kind of blazed his own style of apologetics. So I thought we got to talk about G.K. Chesterton on this show because he's definitely one of those pillars out there that if you aren't familiar with him, you ought to be. And who better to talk about G.K. Chesterton than Dale Elquist? So Dale Elquist is going to join us in the dojo later in the program, talk about who G.K. Chesterton was, his conversion to the Catholic faith, his apologetics, how does his apologetics work? And for those who aren't familiar with him, by the way, I also want to tap Dale's mind as far as where should the beginner begin? Because G.K. Chesterton wrote incredible amount of literature, not just nonfiction, but, fiction and all sorts of stuff. But where do we begin? So if you have any questions that you'd like to talk or pose to Dale Elquist, please give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. So I'm looking forward to that segment of the program. We also have our Finding the Fallacy, and the Finding the Fallacy for today is the Argument from Ignorance. And also the Meet the Early Church Father for today is Isidore of Seville. So a later early church father, and also a very influential figure in church history. Oh, it's time to... by the way, if anyone has any questions that you would like to send via email, and, the dojo mailbox is open 24/7, just shoot us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. Love to see it. We've had some tremendous questions in the past. And, by the way, if I don't get to your questions, I try to answer every single one, but... lately I've been kind of backlogged, so don't worry. The mail that's sitting there in the dojo mailbox, it's there. I just haven't gotten back to you. Please be patient, and perhaps we might even talk about it on the show. We've had some, like I said, some really great questions, we've actually dedicated a couple shows to them. So please keep them coming. And it's time for us to give our shout-outs to those watching live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Great to see everybody. Yes, the emojis are out. And by the way, for those who watch a live stream, if I turn my head this way, I'm not ignoring you. I'm actually looking at the chat room on YouTube. Now, fortunately, I don't have anything for Facebook. So unfortunately, the Facebook people are in the dark. But nevertheless, I do appreciate you watching live stream on Facebook anyway. Okay, so why don't we jump into our exercises for today? And as I said, our Finding the Fallacy. Each show, we try to grab a informal logical fallacy. On Fridays, usually it's a propaganda technique. And look at somehow bad thinking is out there so you can recognize it, detect it, and hopefully clarify it for people. And today's Finding the Fallacy is the Argument from Ignorance. And it's not basically just arguing from things you don't know. Okay, there's a bit of a more structure than that. It's not just an ignorant person who argues commits the argument from ignorance. But rather it's this. It's when something is said to be true because it has not yet been proven false. Okay, so it's kind of like using one's inability to falsify something as proof that something is true. Let me give you some examples. Like I said, usually with Finding the Fallacy, the examples are a lot more clear than the definition. For example, someone could say, we've proved that the moon is not made of cheese, but we haven't proved that its core is not made of cheese. So therefore, you know, this moon cheese theory still stands, right? So it's a, in a sense, you know, since we haven't proven the opposite, you know, the other, the thing that hasn't been proven is true. Okay. So it says that something's true because we haven't been able to prove it false. Okay. Here's another one. This is a classic. You know, I'm kind of a research nerd, and sometimes I do nerdy things, even though I don't know if I'd qualify myself as a nerd. But remember Plan 9 from Outer Space? That's usually voted as one of the worst movies ever made. There is a line at the end of it where it commits the argument for ignorance. And for some reason, it just always stuck in my head. So whenever I see this fallacy, I think of Plan 9 from Outer Space. And as Criswell, you know, he gives this closing dialogue after this real stinker of a movie. And he says, "My friend, you have seen this incident based on sworn testimony. Can you prove it didn't happen?" Okay, well, sure. You can't prove it didn't happen, but that doesn't mean it did happen, right? So that's the argument from ignorance. All right, let's jump to the Meet the Early Church Father for today, who's St. Isidore of Seville, who was born roughly about 560, died 636. Isidore was born in Seville, and his family come there a number of years earlier from Cartagena. Isidore was quite young when his father died, and he was raised by his brother and sister, who are much older than him, and his brother Fulgentius. Later, he was educated in a monastic institution in Seville, and afterwards entered the religious life there. Now, Fulgentius became bishop of Cartagena, and his other brother became archbishop of Seville. Let's see. He's also, his name is Leander. He also became known as the apostle to the Visigoths, Leander. In 599-600 AD, Leander died, and Isidore succeeded his own brother as metropolitan of Seville. From that time until his death, 36 years later, Isidore was one of the most powerful persons in Spain. He presided over numerous councils and synagogues, including a very important church council, excuse me, known as the Fourth Council of Toledo in 633. And this first national council of Toledo, that's not Toledo, Ohio, folks, this is Toledo, Spain, stressed the obligation of clerical celibacy, declared that the clergy is exempt from taxation and from certain feudal obligations, and decreed the establishment of a college in each diocese for the training of clergy. Thus anticipating what was established by the Council of Trent, namely 900 years later, about establishing seminaries. Because up until then, if you wanted to become a priest, you basically would find a good holy priest and study under him, and then later be presented to the bishop to be ordained, which was good, but it wasn't perfect. And, of course, if you're studying under a priest who's not very well educated, yeah, you know, the finishing product isn't very good. So actually, under Isidore of Seville, he actually anticipates a reform that would happen 900 years later at the Council of Trent. In his own time, he was extraordinarily important person in terms of administrative capacity and fostering education. He has enormous influence in the Middle Ages through his writings, especially by reason of his work called Origins, or Etymologies. He wasn't super original as a writer. However, he was incredibly learned and was broadly educated. So it was a great person in a sense to write a textbook. Okay. He was, let's see, in 653 AD, the Eighth Council of Toledo declared him a doctor of the church, and he's honored in Seville for 1,100 years before Pope Innocent XIII declared him a doctor of the universal church in 1722. Like I said, Isidore's writings is numerous. I mean, it's basically an encyclopedia of writings. In the Middle Ages, by the way, anyone who was unfamiliar with Isidore probably would be considered to be not very well educated. So he really becomes a staple of medieval education, and if he a touchstone for anyone who knows anything. Unfortunately, today, and this is from Jurgen's Faith of Early Fathers, he notes that today, unfortunately, Isidore is almost entirely neglected, you know, where before he was a staple of education in the Middle Ages. Now, very few people know of his work or read his works, but you can read his works. They are available. And, I should also note this. One of my favorite resources, by the way, if you ever hear on this program a early church father that you would love to read some of the writings, a lot of them are available for free in English on the web. There's a number of sites who give it. One of my favorites is newadvent.org. That's one of my favorite spots to get there. And by the way, you could just scroll down, choose Isidore, and click on one of his writings and go ahead. Become educated. Become literate. And not only him, but all the early church fathers too. So that's my little tip along with the Meet the Early Church Father. I suppose I should probably finish by saying that Isidore died in 636 AD. And by the way, he also is usually accounted as the last of the early church fathers in the West. Okay, St. John Damascene or St. John of Damascus is usually the last of the early church fathers in the East. Isidore Sabell is the last of the West. All right, folks, that's our sessions for today. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking to Dale Elquist about G.K. Chesterton. Don't want to miss it, folks. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. One of the most influential literary figures out there for defending, explaining the faith, just learning the faith, just introducing people to common sense, remains and Gilbert Keith Chesterton, otherwise known as G.K. Chesterton. And joining us today, we have a person who I think is incredibly well-suited to work us through the incredible thought of G.K. Chesterton, Dale Elquist. Dale Elquist is the president of the Society of Gilbert Keith Chesterton. He's also the publisher of Gilbert Magazine and the creator and host of the popular EWTN series, The Apostle of Common Sense. Dale has written 5 books on Chesterton, including Common Sense 101, Lessons from G.K. Chesterton, and The Complete Thinker. He's also the co-founder of Chesterton Academy, a classical high school in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which has been rated one of the top 50 Catholic high schools in the nation. He's also the chairman of the Chesterton School Network, which now has 15 high schools in the U.S., Canada, and Italy. He and his wife, Laura, live in Minneapolis with 6 children. Dale Elquist, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Thank you, Gary. God bless you.
Oh, no, thank you so much for coming. You have been on my wish list for quite a while. Yeah, you know, G.K. Chesterton, I have to confess, I've read some things of his, but I never got a full grasp of him as a person and his writings, and I figured you, more than anybody, can help walk us through that. Can you tell us a little bit about G.K. Chesterton's life?
He's a writer from the early 20th century, so he died in 1936 and did all of his published writings were in the first third of the century. And during that time, Gary was one of the most prolific writers who ever lived, which is probably why you and a lot of other people haven't ever gotten a grasp of him, because he's so amazingly prolific.
That's true.
But he cranked out 100 books and thousands of newspaper essays and hundreds of poems, and wrote some very famous detective stories featuring a priest named Father Brown. And some amazing works on just intellectually profound works, as well as wonderful epic poems, and kind of shocked the world in 1922 when this very world-famous, world-renowned writer announced that he had been received into the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Now, what was he before that? Was he Anglican or was an atheist? Or
yeah, he worked his way up to becoming Anglican. He came from a very non-denominational, non-creedal background, basically a Unitarian as he was raised as a child, and became a Christian, joined the Church of England right at the turn of the century when he married his wife Frances, and then that was the beginning of a very steady and deliberate trek towards Rome.
Now, most of his writings, was there one period where he wrote the most? I'm just curious.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, I figured with that many works.
Yeah, so they're honestly he just was so amazingly prolific. He, you know, 2-3 books a year would come out from this guy, as well as daily and weekly essays in major newspapers, as well as poems and short stories. So it's just a really mind-boggling literary output that he had.
Yeah, I can imagine. He was a very nominal Protestant, like Unitarian. He became Christian. What were some of the seminal things that propelled him from a non-believer to a believer? What is there any particular ideas
that
hit him?
Yeah, sure. That story is told in his book Orthodoxy, which is written in 1908. Which many people consider a very Catholic book. In fact, the book has been published, reprinted by many Catholic publishers as a great defense of the Catholic Church. And yet he wasn't really quite Catholic when he wrote it, although you can't really find anything in it that contradicts a Catholic understanding of Christianity. He always refers to the Church with a capital C and the historic Church. And so he was really already of the mindset there, you know, kind of thinking like an Anglo-Catholic, that the Anglican Church was also part of the Apostolic Church, you know, because he embraced the Apostles' Creed. Mm-hmm. So it was an understanding of a historic church that he embraced. And this gets into how he defended the faith. because he basically came at it from all sides, and that's how he arrives at Christianity. But he has this great line where he says that it was the arguments against Christianity that convinced him it was true.
Okay. was it because of the other failure, or was it because they pointed at some truth?
No, because he saw that all of these arguments against Christianity were insufficient arguments and also contradictory arguments. People would say, the church is too fancy, too elaborate, too rich. And then people would criticize the church for being too poor, too plain, too ascetic. And, the church would emphasize fruitfulness and babies on the one hand and celibacy on the other. And, he saw all these, the church was criticized for contradictory things. And he said, well, maybe it's the church that's right and all the criticisms that are wrong.
Okay. Yeah, so that brings us to Chesterton's paradoxes. It seems he really loves this paradoxical truth.
Yeah, he's a master of the paradox, or even during his own time, they call him the Prince of Paradox. Whereas Chesterton maintained that his so-called paradoxes were only simple, basic truths that everyone had forgotten, and they sound so astonishing and unexpected because we're not used to hearing the plain truth spoken. But truth does tend to go against our expectations, and Chesterton has a good, he has a good model to follow for paradox, because he believes in that book that says the first shall be last and the last shall be first, and if you want to save your life, you have to lose it, and a virgin shall give birth, and the dead shall rise. Those are all paradoxes.
Yeah.
And so Chesterton is in good company when he says that, the self is more distant than any star, and the worship of health is unhealthy, and the worship of nature is unnatural.
Now, did he have this sense of paradox before he became a believer, or was that something that he kind of clinged to once he became a believer?
I would say that his sense of paradox helped propel him to become a believer, that, he understood that there is this apparently contradictory nature to the truth, that there is this contradiction or this apparent contradiction at the heart of existence. And he said the church is the only philosophy that really embraces that idea, because it is centered around the greatest of all paradoxes, a person who is fully God and fully man at the same time.
Yeah, beautiful. So he's Anglican in England. He's, I imagine, a very well respected, at least very well known writer and thinker in England. What made him choose Catholicism? Because wouldn't that kind of make him a pariah in the eyes of English people?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that was kind of the genius of the creation of the Father Brown character, because he knew that a Catholic priest was someone that was going to be ignored or not taken seriously. And so as a fictional character, being the one who is the only one in the room who can figure out the crime.
Yeah.
it's just a wonderful literary device, because what Chesterton did is he created the underdog detective, kind of the antithesis of Sherlock Holmes. And so, yes, Catholics and Catholic priests were pretty low on the totem pole of in terms of the literary and intellectual circles. And Chesterton not only knew a priest that was, what he thought really a intellectual giant, but also he realized that the historic church had a lot more going for it than all of the recent sects that had broken away from it. So, yeah, he did go against the grain. In fact, one of his great lines, a dead thing can go with the stream, only a living thing can go against it. And and he was the living thing going against the stream by becoming Catholic.
Yeah, what was it that impelled him to Catholicism? Was there a particular thought or person or idea or?
Sure. Yeah. It was a long, steady, and very deliberate conversion. That's why Orthodoxy seems like he's defending the Catholic Church, even though he's still not yet technically Catholic. But yeah. It really is a conversion of the truth, or a convergence of the truth, rather. Okay, that everything pointed to it, and that's why he finally accepted it, that there were no more, he had no more objections left to the Catholic Church. It's continued to be right on every count. And he found it to be the thing that was right when everything else was wrong.
Okay.
The incident that really propelled it was, well, I mean, there's two things. You know, when Gary, people asked him, why did you become Catholic? He said, to get rid of my sins. Only the Catholic Church can do that. So it was an embracing of the sacrament of confession. But also, there was that one thing that separates the Catholic Church from all the other churches, and that was the Virgin Mary. And Chesterton really always had a devotion to the Virgin Mary, but never had any of the Protestant objections to Mary. But he realized that the Catholic Church was the only thing, you know, the only church that really had that veneration of the Mother of God. And of course, could there be a greater paradox than Mother of God? And so he was returning from a trip to the Holy Land, and he walked into a Catholic church in a port town in Italy, in Brindisi. Just walked in and saw a statue of the Virgin Mary, and that's when he realized, when he got back to England, he had to finish the journey he'd started, and he had to become a Catholic.
Wow. I never knew that. That's fascinating. Well, we're just coming up on the break. Perhaps on the other side of the break, why don't we talk a little bit more about G.K. Chesterton's prowess as an apologist, and maybe we can go through some books that absolutely every Catholic needs to read before they die. Okay? Does that sound
right? Yeah, right.
All right. Well, great. We were talking with Dale Elquist about the great G.K. Chesterton, the apologist, and lots of great stuff coming up on the other side of the break, folks. You listen to Hands on Apologetics. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference, or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are chatting with Dale Elquist about G.K. Chesterton, the apologist. And Dale just gave us a brief outline of his own G.K. Chesterton's conversion to Christianity and ultimately to the Catholic faith. And Dale, you know, I realize that I'm amiss here. Usually I ask my guests to give a little bit of a story of themselves about, you know, their journey of faith. And I always wanted to ask you, what was it that attracted you to, you know, studying and basically dedicating your career to propagating G.K. Chesterton's works?
Well, Gary, my story is not interesting, but I was a Baptist. Yeah, I was a Baptist evangelical and a big C.S. Lewis fan, as so many evangelicals are and should be. And it was basically someone pointing out to me that the real force behind C.S. Lewis was G.K. Chesterton. In fact, he made the rather outrageous comment, if you read Chesterton, you don't need to read C.S. Lewis because all of C.S. Lewis is in Chesterton. And I consider that a blasphemous remark, but I tucked that away, that seed that was planted, and it was about 3 years before I picked up my first Chesterton book, and I realized, this guy's even better than C.S. Lewis. And just never went back after that, and it was an interest that became a passion and then just took over my life. Couldn't get enough of Chesterton because he seemed to write and shed light on anything, any topic that he touched, and truly a complete thinker. And then he was at the same time doing a number on me, and I found my way to the Catholic Church really as a result of his influence.
You know, I imagine as a Baptist, the thought of G.K. Chesterton in some ways, like, you know, it has that familiarity through C.S. Lewis, but he also, it must have been also kind of foreign too. There's foreign elements to his writing, given your background.
I think he strikes everybody as different from anything else they've ever read. Chesterton is completely unique, and he takes you on a new journey. And if you're a cradle Catholic, you'll find he's coming at a different angle than a traditional Catholic writer, because he himself came in as an outsider, being a convert himself. And so he's always takes an unusual angle, but it's always a fuller and more complete picture than what you expected. So he's anything but narrow.
Yeah, that's true. And in some ways, isn't it, that's one of his appeals, is that he touches on so many subjects, you know, and ties it all to our faith, that somebody might be interested in political theory and they'll run across Chesterton and they'd be brought to the same, you know, point as, like, for you, a Baptist who reads them and is drawn into the faith.
Absolutely. They may come for him for his literary criticism, because he writes so much about English literature. And if they read his books, for instance, on Charles Dickens, they're going to be swept away by the light that he sheds on that great writer. And then they say, okay, I want to read what else this guy has to say. And then they find themselves being exposed to things that they had never considered that they would want to investigate. Detective fiction, of course, is another thing. You know, people who aren't Catholic love his detective fiction because it's just great detective fiction. But it's also every one of his, Father Brown stories is a little homily as well. So
that's true. So the sheer breadth of his writing, you know, is pulls people in. He's such a unique writer. Did he have any influences? I mean, is there some reason why he's so unique?
Well, I mean, I think we have to acknowledge, Gary, that he was a genius. He was gifted, just like Mozart or Bach had a gift from God. So it was clearly something that he used for the glory of God, his creativity and his amazing mind. But yeah, he filled his mind with good things growing up because he was immersed in English literature. And so, you know, he writes well on Dickens because he read all of Dickens. He writes well on Shakespeare because he read Shakespeare. And it was really the giants of English literature that probably influenced him more than anything else. And so he was able to carve a very good philosophy out of great English literature.
Yeah. Yeah. Now with every great figure, there's always a nemesis, you know, a thorn in the side. Did he have an arch nemesis that, you know, was his arch enemy from an opposing point of view or,
Yeah, that's a great story. I'm glad you brought that up because the fact is Chesterton made friends with all his enemies. His philosophical opponents became close personal friends. Even though they would argue, they'd have great public debates. Chesterton was so engaging and kind and amicable that they couldn't help but like him. And so people like George Bernard Shaw and H.G. Wells, who are thinkers diametrically opposed to G.K. Chesterton, were charmed and won over by the man himself, and they became very good friends. Chesterton was known as the man with no enemies because he would only argue about arguments and not take personal assaults against people.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a mark of a great apologist, too, because, I mean, one of my favorites is Sir Arnold Lunt. And he loved debates, and there is one account where he said that he hammered this guy mercilessly in the written debate, but met him for tennis, and they were best of chums. You know, it was he argued about arguments, like you said.
Yeah, you know, here's a good Arnold Lunt story. I'm glad you brought up Arnold Lunt. He wrote a book called Roman Converts, you know, sort of against the Roman Catholic Church. This is before his own conversion. And he has a whole chapter dedicated to Chesterton and trying to pick apart his defenses of the Catholic faith. Chesterton responded with an extended article in the Dublin Review. And Arnold Lunt, of course, subsequently did become Catholic and subsequently became friends with Chesterton. and of course, a defender of Chesterton's ideas.
Oh, that's beautiful. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
It was.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's it. That was the thoughts right there.
Yeah. Is there a cause for G.K. Chesterton be considered for sainthood? Do you know about that?
There's a movement for a cause where the Chesterton Society that I run is very active in promoting the opening of his cause. It's still not opened. There's been an investigation stage, and we are hoping that it'll lead to the cause being officially open soon. There's certainly a great devotion to Chesterton, and we've passed out a lot of prayer cards asking for his intercession. People are drawn to his goodness, and we need more lay saints. We need especially bottles of lay spirituality for our time. I think Chesterton really fits the bill well.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. But I can imagine, you know, that will be a chore going through all his writings, you know, to analyze it for sainthood.
I think one of the advantages that he will have is the same that Cardinal Newman had, is that they only have to consider his writings after his conversion, because what he wrote before his conversion can't really be held against him because he wasn't Catholic. So.
That's true. I didn't know that. That makes perfect sense. Okay, so there's a good chance he could be canonized before the second coming then.
Yeah.
Boy, if they had to go through all his works.
I've been reading his stuff for about 37 years, and we're still finding new things that he wrote that we didn't know about. It's just an incredible, it blows your mind how much he wrote.
Yeah, indeed. And so incredible mark of charity. I mean, even like you said, even his most bitter enemies looked at him with fondness.
Yes.
Now, was he part of the Inklings?
No, he would be before the Inklings. He's about 25 years older than C.S. Lewis and Tolkien at all. And they were very influenced by him. They read his writings, but they probably, most of them, never met him. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis never met him. Charles Williams may have met him.
Okay, yeah. But they certainly they knew about his writings. I mean, I imagine there was a huge body of...
And Lewis demonstrates that very clearly. I mean, Lewis's main arguments from Mere Christianity are all lifted from The Everlasting Man by Chesterton.
Wow. I didn't know that. Oh, that's fascinating. So if you want to read Mere Christianity, you should read Everlasting Man first.
Yeah, and then just keep reading Chesterton after that.
Yeah, there you go. we have maybe a couple of minutes. Now, one reason why he has so many writings, he wrote a column in the newspaper, right? He was a columnist.
Yes, that's one of the reasons why he was so popular. I mean, he wrote a lot of books, but he was known for his newspaper columns, which is why people knew him. In fact, it's one of the reasons why people stopped knowing him so much after his death, because he stopped writing for the newspaper when he died, you know? And so it was his daily articles, which were on all different subjects, all across the spectrum, in which he would defend Christianity. Even though he wrote for secular newspapers, he always pointed to God. There was always an eternal reference point, and said, you know, that the modern world's main problem is that it's a religious problem, it's a mental problem as well as a moral problem, and we've forgotten God, and we've forgotten that the truth that the church teaches, and the more that we wander from them, the more messed up the world gets, and that's kind of an ongoing theme.
Interesting, yeah. So even in a secular newspaper, you know, it's ultimately comes back to the ultimate first principle, God.
Yep.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, he also, put together faith and reason so well. That's why he's so, he was able to, he doesn't even have to overtly talk about God, but he implies that, that's the thing that's missing. So he could do it both ways, by pointing directly to the truth of the Catholic Church, or just implying this is where it's at. So he's very genius in his argument.
Yes, very good. Well, we're talking to Dale Elquist about G.K. Chesterton. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back after this break.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference, or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support, because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Dale Elquist about G.K. Chesterton. And before I go to book recommends, like I've been promising, you know, Dale, it occurred to me during the break that Chesterton lived into the mid-1930s. Are there any audio recordings of him?
Yeah, there's three audio recordings of his voice. He did a BBC radio broadcast on a fortnightly basis in the 1930s, and in fact, people bought radios just so they could hear Chesterton's voice. Wow. And those were all book reviews, so they're all literary nature. And we have two of those that were preserved, and then he also gave an after-dinner talk, and we have that one as well. So those are the three recordings of his voice that we have.
Okay. Now, tell the truth. After hearing his voice, when you read his works, do you hear his voice in your head?
Well, you know, I felt like I heard his voice before I actually heard his voice, because there's something about the geniality in it and the humility in it. I think the thing that was added is the fact that he would chuckle at his own jokes a little bit, and so his good-natured quality just comes out in those recordings.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, well, let's go to book recommends, because you know his works better than anybody, you know, on the planet, I imagine. So where would a beginner who has never read Chesterton before, where's the best place to start?
Well, okay, now, again, this answer I'm going to give you is going to sound a little weird and a little self-serving, but I always recommend people start with one of the books that I wrote about Chesterton, because they really provide good introductions. And one of those is The Apostle of Common Sense, which is just an overview of his most important writings. And then another one is called Common Sense 101, Lessons from Chesterton. And that takes him by his main themes. And really all I do is quote Chesterton in the book. So I don't really do much writing at all. It's all Chesterton arranged by me and me dodging between the Chesterton quotations. And I just came out with a new book called Night of the Holy Ghost, which is a biography of Chesterton and a look into his writings and making a case for his sainthood as well. So now, after those, any of those three are good introductions. The book there's kind of four main books that one should read by Chesterton, and then there's probably four more after. But Orthodoxy and The Everlasting Man are his great defenses of the faith. His book on St. Francis of Assisi and St. Thomas Aquinas are just wonderful treatments of those, not only of those saints, but of mysticism and scholasticism. I mean, the two elements of the faith, the mystical element and the intellectual element of the faith, so really great combinations. And then I recommend, obviously, the Father Brown stories are a great delight. Any book of his essays is going to be a real treat. I think I referred to his book on Charles Dickens before. That's one of those things where you just can't go wrong. It will just astonish you. But then one of his novels is called Man Alive, and one's The Man Who Was Thursday. Those are just terrific novels as well.
Okay. Yeah, it's like, where do you start, you know? That's why I think you're absolutely right that the beginner should go to like a compendium or an introduction first, because he's written on so many different things in so many different genres. Let's see, The Apostle of Common Sense. Who's the publisher for that?
That's an Ignatius book. In fact, Ignatius published all three of those first ones I mentioned, The Apostle of Common Sense, Common Sense 101, and Night of the Holy Ghost. Those are all by Ignatius.
Okay, very good.
You can also go to our webpage, Gary, which is chesterton.org, and the books are all available there, as well as a bunch of Chesterton's writings. And if anyone is interested in taking it a step further, the Chesterton Society publishes a magazine, Gilbert Magazine, which is a great collection of, not only showing how contemporary his commentary is, but talks about some of the ministries that we are involved in, which includes classical education.
Very good. Yeah, so Gilbert, it is obviously, you have his works and so on, and then you talk about G.K. Chesterton and contemporary issues. And then,
what
was that
so
third
prophetic
thing?
And so, we basically, have a running commentary on today's world from G.K. Chesterton because he's so prophetic.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, beautiful. So definitely stop there. So, I'm sorry, could you give that website again just in case people didn't?
Yes, absolutely. It's chesterton.org, O-R-G. If they go to chesterton.com, Gary, they'll get hydraulic valves. that might be what they want, but that's not going to get into the writings by G.K. Chesterton. So chesterton.org.
Very good. Chesterton.org. Yeah, check it out, everybody. Because you really do need a roadmap for Chesterton. Because you crack open like an Ignatius Press catalog and turn to the Chesterton sections, of multiple pages, you could really get lost. So, yeah, very good. Dale, if you could go back in a time machine and meet Chesterton, what questions would you ask him?
That's a fun question in that I feel like he's already answered all the questions that I've had to ask. Because I've had the great privilege of reading him, for over 30 years, and he comes up with things that I say, oh yeah, I was wondering what he thought about that. There it is. He tells me. It's one of the things that also convinces me that he's a saint, that he's so present. I really feel a part of the community of saints. He's become, a living friend of mine, and that's what a saint is. And so I've never really had the, I really feel like I haven't missed anything by not having been with him during his lifetime, because I feel like I'm with him right now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because, it's just as God is the answer to all questions, it's like a saint should radiate that the different mm-hmm. parts of their life, no matter how you approach them, ultimately should lead you to God. That's a really profound insight.
You're here.
One question I would have, it's pretty mundane.
Your question, Gary.
Maybe you can answer this, is why, from what I understand, he had a cane that was also a sword, right? Or is that a myth?
He would call it a walking stick, which is different from a cane.
Okay.
A walking stick is sort of an ornament that a gentleman carries with him and uses it as a prop and points to things with it. And there was a time when he was a younger man that he also, his walking stick was also a sword stick. There was a concealed sword inside of it. And I think it was part of his romantic nature. There was part of him that always was the knight and always the chivalrous one, ready to defend a woman in a duel and strike out against his enemies. The only thing he ever stabbed with his sword were the pillows in his study when he was dictating an essay to his secretary or something. So.
That's a beautiful thing about him because, in some ways, just in terms of appearance, he's something of a paradox. He's the chivalrous knight, yet he had some girth, And I can relate to that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he was very – people were struck by his great size because he was not only rotund, but he was tall too, which was – when he walked through the room, everybody looked up because he filled up the room. And he was always joking about his size. He said, I'm the politest man in all of England because I could stand up on a bus and offer my seat to three women at one time.
That's great. Yeah, I can relate. I'm 6'8", so
Oh, God bless you. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So the effect that you have on people would be the same that he would have, because relatively speaking, a 6'4" guy like he was would have had that same effect walking into the room.
Yeah. So he would stick out in a crowd, just like his writings.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah. There's a great story of a lady coming up to him on the street saying, "Everybody seems to know you, Mr. Chesterton." And he sighed and says, "Yes, and if they don't, they ask."
Yeah, what a great, and, you know, he's one of those people, too, that if you picked up one of his works and, you know, didn't pay attention to the title page and just started reading it, you'd immediately know it's him. You know, it's so distinctive of a writer and a thinker that it's like fingerprints. You just know it's him.
Yeah, very much so. But the other thing that the first-time reader is going to do when they're reading him is go back and try to figure out when it was written, because it is amazing how he seems to be writing for the time we live in, even though he wrote 100 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Still, well, you know, that's truth is timeless. You know, it's
amen.
It's applicable in the first century. It's applicable now. It's applicable millennia from now. All right. So, man, I can't believe that our time has flown like this. before I let you go, once again, if you could give the names of your books and also the website.
Yeah, the Apostle of Common Sense and Common Sense 101 are great introductions to Chesterton. I just came out with a new biography called Night of the Holy Ghost. And I should mention one other book, too, Gary, also just came out, called My Name is Lazarus. And it's 34 stories of converts whose path to Rome was paved by G.K. Chesterton, people who read Chesterton.
Wonderful.
Found the Catholic Church, and all different backgrounds, and just a delightful book. And then they can find all these books at chesterton.org.
My Name is Lazarus. I'm definitely picking that up. That sounds awesome.
Great.
Awesome. So, chesterton.org, right? Not the hydraulic thing. Right.
Not the hydraulic,
well, thank you, right. Dale. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Have a blessed Lent. God bless.
Thank you. You too. All right, everybody. Wow. What an amazing introduction to an amazing author, G.K. Chesterton. Dale Elquist, man, I admire how much he knows about G.K. Chesterton. And he's definitely a figure you need to know. As that the book, My Name is Lazarus, points out, he's incredibly influential in bringing people to the Catholic faith. So, you know, we should learn from him. Anyway, coming up next, we have the best of the Terry and Jesse show today. Unfortunately, it's not a live show. Jesse is out evangelizing, which, you know, who would have thought? And also Terry's feeling a little bit under the weather. So let's pray for both of them. And they'll be back tomorrow for Terry and Jesse show live. Also, tomorrow on Hands-On Apologetics, we're going to have Dr. Stacy Tresecos. She's going to be coming on to talk about how her being a scientist had prepared her way for conversion to the Catholic faith. In her book, Particles of Faith, that's going to be cool. And Thursday, convert to the faith and scripture scholar, John Bergsma. Dr. John Bergsma joins us to talk a little bit about his conversion story and also focus on the book of Daniel and how Daniel's prophecies are fulfilled in Jesus the Messiah. So, great week in store for us today. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.